Hi. My name is Angela Pete, and I'm an alcoholic. I got married since I registered for the convention. Thank you. Yeah. Wow. So my sobriety date is June 21st, 2000. I just made it to 15 years, thank God. I live in Arizona. I have a home group and a sponsor and a service commitment, or 20. I have a lot of service commitments. I'm a service junkie. I started reading The Grapevine in early sobriety. Somebody gave me an issue, and I could digest a paragraph or, you know, a letter or a page. Like, it was something that would help me to focus for a few minutes because I was terrified of everybody and everything. And I don't know, I just love The Grapevine because it kind of gave me a view of the world, like other alcoholics around the world who were staying sober and pretty good, having a good life. I decided to contribute to The Grapevine. The first time was a joke. I heard it at a roundup, and I stole it, and I sent it in, and, you know, I was like, you know, the jokes aren't that good, so maybe they'll actually publish it. Sorry, guys. and they did. It was, if you're a doc, somebody at a meeting, there was a doctor at a meeting, and he said, somebody asked him, if they had created a pill to cure alcoholism, would you want it? And he said, yes, I want more of them. So I was like, wow, they printed it. And then, you know, that gave me the confidence to send in my story. Like, I just answered a call for articles for newcomers, and it didn't end up in the, printed until, like, I don't know, a couple of years later or something. I got it in the mail, and I was, like, at my mom's house, and she said, I was jumping up and down. I was so excited that I got, you know, my story in The Grapevine, and she said, can I read it? And I said, no. It's got a good ending, but, you know, she didn't really need to know all the details, so she still hasn't read it to this day. I have a creative background. I went to school for illustration, and I had a dream of being an illustrator. And little did I know that my dream would come true as a member of of AA. I got to illustrate a story in one of the Grapevines, I couldn't tell anybody about it. Like, it was like, I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a famous magazine where it was like, Angela. I was like, here, I can't tell anybody that I illustrated a story. I can tell you guys, but, like, you know, it was a dream come true, and that's pretty cool. In 2013, I wrote a story about dating, and it got published in the Grapevine issue about dating. And I've since gotten married, which is like, wow, that actually happened. And in December of last year, I had an article about bringing meetings into a prison. There's a women's prison in Goodyear, Arizona, that I brought meetings to. I was in a bad spot, and I needed something to do, and they said, I need somebody to take a meeting to a prison, and it was so good for me. Like, it was a huge dose of gratitude every time I went in and came out of that place. And I just submitted it, and somehow they always said yes, and I don't know. I'm sure one day I'll write something that'll be terrible, and they won't publish it, but I have a lot of experience, you know, submitting stuff, and that's because it's our magazine. It's not, you know, somebody out there. It's for alcoholics by alcoholics. When I moved from New Jersey, I got sober in New Jersey, and Luke's here. Woo! We got sober together. When I got sober in New Jersey, I moved to Arizona. I became a GSR, General Service Representative, and I ended up falling in love with General Service, and I eventually became, I'm now currently serving as a District Committee Member Chairperson for District 8 in Arizona, Area 03. That's the Phoenix area. And I just chair a meeting. It's really terrifying, but, you know, I'm willing, so I do it, and I show up, and they let me do it. But as a result of my service, I've been able to go to PRASA, the Pacific Regional Alcoholics Anonymous Service Assembly. And that's where I met Amy, the executive editor publisher of The Grapevine. And they were talking about they needed members for this editorial advisory board. And I was like, what is that? And sure, you know, I was willing. And she asked me to submit my resume. So I did. And so I'm in my third year of 4 years in that position. And I tell you all this because, you know, I'm just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that loves The Grapevine. And I found, you know, I found a sponsor through The Grapevine. Like, she was in area service. And, like, it's been an integral part of my sobriety. And it's a huge gift. So let's see. I know I haven't even started. I didn't time myself. I'm just going to keep talking and see what happens. So I'm here because it's a Record Your Story workshop. And I recorded a story. That's what I did. I'm a member of the editorial advisory board, and I want to support The Grapevine. And so they have this new thing where, you know, you can record your story, and it's a 7-minute share about whatever. So I got my phone out, and your voicemail greeting, and you can record it over again if you don't like it. So you can do that with this, not here today because you're on a microphone, but lucky you. But it's very simple, and it's just like, it's great for people that can't, you know, that aren't interested in writing, and that, you know, it's really short. It's only 7 minutes. I mean, every alcoholic can talk about themselves for 7 minutes. It's really, it's not that hard for us. So I challenge all of you and your friends to, you know, try it. And it's a way to support The Grapevine and to, you know, help them in this new project, relatively new project that it's exciting. Like, The Grapevine is the International Journal of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the voice of AA, the current voice of AA. And you are part of that voice. So, you know, I got the phone out. I did follow the directions. I don't think I recorded over. I probably started, and then I was like, no, no, no. And then I just talked for 7 minutes like I was in a meeting. And then I had hit send. And I don't know what happened to it. Eugene will tell you about that. I don't know what happened to it. But I did it, you know, and it was a way to contribute, like to share my experience, strength, and hope in a way that, you know, I don't know where it's going to end up. Like, just like in any meeting, you share your experience, strength, and hope. You don't know who's going to hear what they need to hear, but, you know, you get to have the gift of sharing and being sober. As a member of the editorial advisory board, it's in the service manual. Like, there's a paragraph. It's so, like, what is it? It's a group of alcoholics that live around the country. There's one from Canada, and we just have conference calls a few times a year, like every other month, and we talk about The Grapevine. They're just members, like, out in the fellowship that are kind of like the ears. You know, we're just here to help The Grapevine, you know, figure out how can we do things better, you know, how can we reach more people. You know, how can we increase subscriptions? And we just have discussions. It's a brainstorming session. It's really an honor, like a tremendous honor to be a part of it. And I'm really sad that there's only a year left, but that's okay. It's like, it's a gift of sobriety that I didn't even know I wanted. So as a member of this board, excuse me, oh, that's yours. That's mine. Excuse me. As a member of this board, I had the opportunity to listen to some stories. And so Eugene was saying how we have three people listen to stories and kind of we note, you know, these are the aspects that, you know, if there's noise in the background or, you know, there's too many F-bombs or, you know. This is the theme of the story, like, you know, it's about being a beginner or it's about being, you know, doing service or, like, you know, in each issue of The Grapevine there's a theme where there's the focus on the topic. And so it was really such a joy to listen to these stories. And I was on the host committee for the International Conference of Young People in AA when it was in Phoenix 2 years ago. And there was a booth there. There was like a room where people could go and do this. And I got to listen to some of them. Like, I knew some of the people. It was like such a small world. Like, some of the people that I got to listen to from being a member of the board, I knew them because they were at IKIPA in Phoenix. So YPA's been a big part of my life too, and like it's another growing young people in AA. It's another, you know, it's not different from AA. It's just like another, it's a way for people that are young to feel like they contribute in their own special way. Like, I was 26 when I got sober. I was like, I'm too young. You know, it's not going to work. And they keep making drinks that I never had, you know, and but I wouldn't trade my sobriety. I have such a gifted life. So, you know, I knew I was going to be on this panel for a little while, like a couple months, and I thought, oh, well, just recruit some people to record a story before I get there. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I procrastinate, so I didn't do that. But I'm glad you're all here. I told some people to show up, and some people followed my request, and I'm grateful. Am I done, John? Excellent. So, to wrap it up, I just want you to know that I can't believe I'm standing here, and that I have 15 years of sobriety, and that I have so much joy and love in my life, and that I get to figure out who I am as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, the stories that the contributions that I've done for Grapevine have kind of like been a little progressive, you know, documentation of my story in Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be able to go back and read things, or like say, hey, this is where I was in this time of my life when I wrote the story, or when I submitted that. And, you know, it's quite a journey, and it's only 15 years. Like, it feels like it's a lot, but it's not. And I just want to stay one day at a time. So thanks for being here. I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Angela, and sorry about the initial thing. Congratulations. And now our second speaker is from Area 10, Colorado, and he is David H., and no initial changes for you. Okay. Sorry.
I have the ability now.
Okay, good. Well, he is a former Grapevine area chair, and he's here to share his experience, strength, and hope with us about Grapevine. Thank you.
Oh, thank you all. My name's David Higginbotham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
My sobriety date is September 11th of 2004. Yeah, seemed fitting somehow. My home group is the Come to Believe group in Little Canyon City, Colorado. I'm sponsored. I have a service sponsor. I am a sponsor. I've been in area service now for the last 8 years of my 10 years of sobriety. And it's what's changed my sobriety. I often say in some ways that traditions have done more for me than the steps as far as ego deflation has done. I would challenge people to look at the long form in our traditions and really, really take a hard look at the 36 principles we have. I was asked to do Grapevine in the last rotation, and I thought, well, I'd better subscribe. And and I wasn't quite sure what to do or how to get started or anything like that. And so the young peeps asked me to come up to Joanne's District 21, and they were putting on a deal up there, and so I went up, and I wasn't sure, so I just kind of like, I always wanted to like be a reporter for an underground newspaper, right? And so I thought, here's my big chance, and I started asking people, and I'd say, tell me about Grapevine. And I got two answers. I don't know, was one. And the other one was, oh, I love the Grapevine. Without it, I wouldn't be sober. And so there was a disparity there, it seemed to me. And so my job right then and there, I knew, was one of awareness. And that Grapevine is an excellent tool that's just not being used as much as it could. Oh, sure, it's great in corrections. It's great here and there, you know, in treatment centers, da-da-da. We ought to have it. But as far as reading it myself, I didn't start until I became the chair. And if I had a better story, I'd tell you it. But it has increased my sobriety. It's made a big difference in my little home group. Now, we have a state convention every year, and so Michelle Kay wanted it to be about service, and so all the service chairs were there. And so I asked for a little room, and she was kind enough to set me up with a little room that, you know, had a door on it and everything, and you could go in there with a modicum of privacy. And what we did is we handed out kind of a little cheat sheet that had topics on it, and then it had about 10 pages of lined paper with a little cardboard backer on it. And Joanne was kind enough again to help us get those printed pretty cheap. And so we'd hand those out, and people could kind of write down some notes and things before they went in and did their story. And which turned out to be very helpful. And I think we did about 20 recordings that weekend. And we thought, well, we could have done better, but it was a great experience. Eric's here, who is my co-chair, and thank you for all your work. You know, Bill really wanted this to be the voice of Alcoholics Anonymous as such. And when I say as such, that's the everyday, that's where you go to your home group and you talk. And so, and Grapevine's a lot like that. You can read one story and you just go, oh my God, you know, and read another story and be so totally inspired, that it changes your life. And to me, that's what Grapevine is. It really is a mirror of our actual fellowship, warts and all. And I think it ought to be that way. I'm one that believes that orthodoxy is the death of any spiritual movement. And when we get too rigid in our thinking and too, rote in how we do things, it's kind of the end of us. If you're ever interested, Bill wrote a letter to Royal Shepherd, who was the lawyer that actually put it together. And, of course, he has 12 points. He starts off by saying, alcoholics hate to read, and then he writes a 9-page letter, right? And kind of the fix was in with Bill there. I think he really saw it as a means of getting his voice out. They sent it to 300 secretaries across the country for a local New York paper. So this is a very interesting read and can kind of give you a good idea. That and the guidelines and of course the concepts are a great, great tool in anything that you're going to do in service. Again, it's about awareness. And just giving people the opportunity, and just asking them, do you want to share? And 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a yes. You know, I want to share. Yesterday I was at and they were talking, somebody had mentioned how it comes in a black paper bag, right, when it comes to you. And the first time I got my Grapevine, my secretary, I come in, she goes, this came for you. And I said, oh, my goodness. I said, you know, the stories in here actually have happened to me. And And so that was the funnest committee I have ever done. If you ever get the chance to serve on Grapevine, do a lot of workshops. Do a lot of writing workshops. Have people share about what they're writing about. You really get at the heart of things. And ultimately, it's going to be about allowing ourselves to be vulnerable. Right? And who of us that's alcoholic is going to allow ourselves to be vulnerable? Right? That takes some step work. But that's what Grapevine is. It's an opportunity to share your story with 77,000 people, I think it is now, the number of copies that are going out, something like that. And that's a lot of people. So again, I thank the people of Area 10 that have helped me. Joanne has been such a big help to me. And Eric, of course, was a big help. I couldn't have done it without a lot of help. But it is about awareness. Awareness. That's what's going to allow Grapevine to continue. And so go home, get yourself a Grapevine button, because they're out there. Hopefully there's more out there. And give it a shot. See what if you haven't subscribed to Grapevine in a long time, subscribe. I was told I couldn't bitch about Grapevine if I didn't have a subscription. And so I bought one. And now I'm a big proponent of it because it is our voice. It's almost our First Amendment of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's a right to participation and things like that, and there's a whole kind of stair-step way that you can go through the service structure and have your vote and your voice. But with Grapevine, you get your voice anytime you like. And if it's well written enough, John's going to put it in the paper. He's going to put in one of mine next month, you know, and which I can't believe. So I guess I can't think of much more to say. Yes. A simple search will find it. It's the letter to Royal Shepherd, and you can find that. Yeah, very quite simply. I'm not sure it's conference approved, but it was very helpful to me to get an idea of what Bill was thinking about it, and so. Yeah, so there's so much stuff out there available, pro and con with Alcoholics Anonymous, but it saved my life, and I'm here to stay. So that's all I got. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, David. And now what we'd like to do is have some people come up and record a story or share. So if everybody could just think of a topic, because of the 7-minute time factor, it's good to have a topic that you want to speak about. Most of us cannot do our full what it was like, what happened and what it's like now in 7 minutes. Although some people can, I guess, if you practice. But if you can think of a topic on the handout, there's a list of suggested topics or other topics that you may want to share about. So what we're going to do here is you're going to come up to the mic, and we're going to ask you to give us your first name and where you're from, and then pause and share for 7 minutes. And we have a timekeeper, Deanna, up in the first row here. She's sitting. And she'll give you a 1-minute warning. She'll hold up a sign that says 1 minute. And then when she holds up the sign that says thank you, that means it's over. So then if you could just come to me and give me your telephone number, because I'll be sitting right here. We have to get a permission from you. And so we have to be able to contact you. It's just we try and follow the same sort of we follow the same thing as a written story. We get permission to use the story, and you sign the story over to the Grapevine. So we must have a way to get in touch with you, or else we cannot use the story. Okay? So, a phone number and email address would be helpful for us as a way to contact you. Just for your information, there are other ways you can do this from home, too. You can call our telephone number, which is listed in this handout, and you can follow the instructions and submit a story that way. Or if you have a smartphone, I know on Apple phones they have something called a voice memo. You can record a voice memo and email it to Grapevine. But it must contain the same information, a way for us to get in touch with you. So you have to give your name, where you're from, and a phone number. And obviously it will be sent from an email, so that's where we would contact you for the permission. But I guess that's about it. So shall we? When the person gets up here to the mic and starts to record, John's going to hold up a quiet please. And it's very important. This is not speaker tapes or anything like that. These are just stories. So we really don't want any noise on the tape other than the speaker's voice. So when this says quiet, please, we can't have any noise. And after the person speaks, John, are we going to try the thing?
Yes.
Instead of applauding, we're just going to go like this so it'll be silent. Okay? Kathy, do you want to try? Okay, come up. Yeah, sure. We could just line up here, right? Maybe?
Could I just say hello first before I have to be quiet? So I don't feel so nervous.
Yes, but very quickly.
Okay.
We have a lot of people.
I just want to say hi. That's all. I'm okay now.
Say your name and where you're from.
Where you're from.
And pause.
And then pause and then start.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Kathy P. I am an alcoholic. I am from Hudson, New York. My home group is the Goya Group. We don't speak Spanish. It means get off your ass. Oh, I thought you said to pause.
Oh, no, no.
Okay.
No.
I'm very grateful to be here. My sobriety date is December 9th, 1985. I wanted to tell you about the first time that I went to work once I was sober. I worked for the same place for many years, and I was a drunken employee for many years. But on that last day that I drank, I walked down the hall going into the office, and I saw my boss out of the corner of my eye and realized that I couldn't stay because I was still drunk from the night before. But I did not have one more lie or one more story to tell, and I realized my bag of tricks was empty. So I left and started my journey of sobriety. I went to a detox and a rehab. I had a pretty prominent position in my job. I was one of the people who were right out front. I worked for a small SUNY college. You couldn't miss me. I mean, like I said, I had a prominent position. But I went to detox. I went to rehab for about 2.5 months, and I was gone from work all that time. And on my first day of returning, I was incredibly nervous. I felt everyone was judging me and had been talking about me. And I really felt sick to my stomach walking back there, but I knew it was something that I had to do. I had been going to meetings, you know, as soon as I got out of the rehab, and I just knew I had to move forward with this. In it probably would have been easier for me to quit and find something else, but I felt like it was the sober thing to do and make amends to this institution that I had robbed of good employment for many years. So I walked down that long hall again, and it was so funny. I was afraid coming back sober, as just afraid as I was when I left drunk. And the boss didn't really know what to do with me and gave me this project with someone else from another department. And I worked very hard for 3 or 4 days with this other person on this project while I'm sure my boss was thinking, oh, my God, is she going to break out into a drunk any minute or what's going to happen? But I completed the job and was grateful that I had this other thing to do. At the end of 4 days, that project was over. And when I got to work on the fifth day, there was a big well, let me just remind you that I had a prominent position. I was gone for 1 week in detox, 2.5 months in rehab, gone from this prominent position, and now I come back on the fifth day of work after working for this man for 4 days, and a very large magnum of champagne is on my desk with ribbons and a big note thanking me for all the wonderful work that I had accomplished on those 4 days and saying how wonderful my work was. I probably would handle that differently now and just say thank you and walk away with the magnum and give it to my friend. But I was new sober then and didn't have the tools that I have today. So I took the magnum and I walked into his office and I said, do you know where the hell I've been for almost 3 months? And he said, no. And I said, I've been in rehab. I've been in detox. Oh, I didn't even know that you were gone, he said. I didn't even notice. I thought it was like maybe on a Friday you weren't here or something. I couldn't believe that I wasn't that important, that he didn't even know. I was so worried about these people talking about me and whispering and gossiping. This guy didn't even know I was gone. It was a lesson in humility, and it was a good lesson to start my job, to just realize to be a worker among workers, you're not that important, and to just keep going. I'm very grateful to share my story with all of you today. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nancy. I am an alcoholic. My home group is Babes in Recovery in Galt, California. My topic is going back to school and sobriety. I dropped out of school when I was 16 because I was too smart and I knew everything, and there was no reason for me to go back to school. As time went on, I continued with my drinking. I got sober when I was 31, and I still felt like that failure. When I was 29, I went back to high school, continuation high school, and got my high school diploma, graduated the day before my last baby was born when I was 31, and I was defiant. I felt like I had done that just to get back to him and prove to him that I could do something, and I still just did not feel like I was complete. When the child was 11 months old, I got sober, and the day I got sober was the day I filed for a divorce. When I was divorced, I had been working as a hairdresser 3 days a week and not doing very well at that and couldn't support my family on it. And I went back to school, as that's what my sponsor had suggested. And I needed a job that I could do something with other than what I was doing that had benefits. So she told me, go to school, learn how to type. And typing opened the doors for many things for me. And I got a job through the help of AA telling me where to apply for jobs, county, city, federal, any kind of government position. And AA has been there all along. God has helped me through everything. And when I went to work and I wanted to promote up to other positions, they told me that if I didn't have a degree, that I really wasn't going to go anywhere. And I was so scared. I didn't feel like I was smart enough for college, and that it took everything I had to get through high school. But I was willing to start, and I had no direction. I just kind of went off on my own, just doing what I had always been doing, self-will run riot. But I was determined. I have determination. And so I was determined that I was going to get this done. And I started going to school, taking secretarial science, because that's what I knew to do. And then I went off in another direction, doing something else. And then I got a promotion with my an upward mobility promotion with I was working for the VA in Sepulveda, California, and again to go further in my career, if I wanted to have one and get a better paying job, I had to have a degree. And so I started going to school again and taking classes on construction technology. I took it one class at a time. I had two children at home. I had a husband. I was going to meetings 5 days a week, working full-time and going to school at night. This took a toll on my family. And at 12 years sober, my marriage broke up. Everything was just turned around. I continued going to school. I moved back from Southern California. I moved up to Northern California. Got a job working. I transferred out of the secretarial and the position that I was in and with the electric shop, and got a job working as a firefighter at Beale Air Force Base, working 24 on, 24 off. On my off days, I went to school. And after 10 years of going to school in sobriety, I finally got a degree. And I was so proud. It was an AA degree, but boy, you know, I was so proud as if I'd had a master's or a doctorate. It just meant so much to me. And AAs were with me all the way through that. My family didn't want to come to my graduation. There were two AA members there who came and supported me. And I got to use that degree. Started another business after I retired from the post office. I transferred out of the fire department, went to the post office thinking, oh, wow, everybody likes mail. Well, post office turned out to be not the dream job I thought it was. And after a few dog bites and wanting to take an Uzi and wipe out my supervisor, I thought it'd be better if I left. And I went for counseling. They suggested that I go back to school one more time. What that eventually ended up was I got to use the experience that I got in sobriety. I got to use that in helping other alcoholics. And this is the reward that I got for AA all the way through, continuing, perseverance, the principle of step 10. Got to use that to put it to good use for me, to feel good about myself for finishing something, even though it took me 10 years to get there, to stick with it just like sobriety, one day at a time. This thing works. And I got to pass that on to others. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brad M. I'm an alcoholic. I am the GSR for the Roundtable Group in downtown Phoenix. I got sober on November 24th, 2003. About every 5 years that shows up on Thanksgiving, which I'm very grateful for. One of my passions is to stick around and watch the miracles happen, not just mine, but the ones I see around me. And I had two miracles related to Icky Pa 2013. At the time, I was 61 years old and was like, what do I do? Do I go to Icky Pa? Well, my wife, Patty M., is in the program. And so she snuck down there on Friday and then called me up. She goes, it's okay. We saw Mary Beth P. I know she's got to be 50, so we can go. So we went. And the first miracle I saw we got a little late into the main speaker on Friday night, and we're in the back of the room. There's 600 people in there. They had big video boards. And I'm listening. I'm like, wait a minute. I know him. I know Nick. I'd gone to a men's stag when I first got sober. It was a Monday night dinner meeting, and this little kid showed up. He's 15 years old. He was strung out, tatted up, pierced, just a real mess. Here he is, about 8 years later, speaking, the main speaker on the Friday night conference at Equipa. He was a dropout, right? High school dropout. He showed up to share his story. He was on his way at that point in 2013 with his wife and child to the University of Chicago to begin his doctorate program. Quite a miracle if you'd seen him 8 years ago. The other thing that happened was on Sunday morning, I was back at work. I work in a hotel. That conference was at a hotel nearby. And there's this young cook that I know works in both hotels. And she came up to me and she goes, hey, did I see you at the Biltmore? I go, yeah, you did. It was a great time. And I didn't want to break anybody's anonymity, mine or hers, so I could just kind of let it go because I didn't really know her that well. Well, the following October 19th was on a Sunday. She worked in another department. I was taking a break. She kind of passed through, and she came up to me. She goes, I got to talk to someone. I said, great. What do you want to talk about? She goes, got real close. She goes, it's my birthday. I go, okay, that's cool. And then I said, which one? And she held up her index finger. And I got to tell you, that started some tears flowing. That was really one of the sweetest moments. I've been employed at that place for about 10 years, and that's probably the sweetest moment I've had. But those are the kind of miracles that I see every day in AA, and some of them are a little more poignant than others. Some of them are a little more humble. But that's what I try to stress to our newcomers, that stick around. You will be witness to many, many, many of these little miracles like that are just really touching and inspire me to continue to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. My thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Roger S. I'm from Largo, Florida. My sobriety date is September 19th of 1997. And I'd like to take you through my favorite meditation. I never got meditation until I was at a retreat, and I went through this lead meditation, and I finally got it. And this is what I'd like to share with you, and maybe you'll get it too. First thing about meditation is you really kind of need to be in the focus in the moment, and you need to be in a correct position. So the position that I would recommend is you sit straight up, both feet on the floor, get your head so it's evenly on your shoulders and well weighted. It's not forward back, not forward or back, so it's equally weighted on your shoulder. Palms on your lap, face up, close your eyes. One deep breath. Now, since this is a lead meditation, I'm going to take you to a place. And we begin this place in a wheat field. Tall wheat, just finished raining. It's early in the morning, sun's rising. And as you walk through the wheat, you hear the sound of the wheat crunching under your feet. And the droplets in the rain that's been captured in the head of the wheat, brushing up against your legs, getting you wet. And you feel it brushing against the back of your palm, back of your hands, and across the face of your palms. And the heads of the wheat, the little pricklies on the wheat, are stinging your fingers as you walk by them. And as you're walking in this wheat, you come over just the crest of this little knoll. And you see off in the distance, you see a wall. And as you begin to approach this wall with the sun at your back, you notice that it's made of granite. And the granite is glistening in the sun. And it has the colors of the rainbow in it. But mostly it's black and it's brown. It's the dark granite from out west. And as you approach this wall, you begin to see that there's an opening in the wall, and it's off to your left a little bit, and so you start heading towards the opening. And as you head towards this opening, you see that the wheat begins to die out and begins to be a nice clear path. And as you get to the opening, you see that it's an arch over the opening. And at the crest of the arch, at the apex of the arch, there's a keystone. And on the keystone, the words willingness are engraved. And as we pass under the arch, through the moment of willingness, we find that we have entered into a rose garden. And the dew rising and the fragrance of the roses slowly come to you and very soft breezes into your. So you're smelling the roses, you're taking in the sights, roses of every color, and you see that this path is starting in a long circle around the rose garden. So we walk down this path, bend down occasionally, take a bud in our hands, feel the velvet of the rose petals, smell the aroma. And this path takes us into an opening in the center of this rose garden. And in the center of this opening, there's a very ornate bench. There's no back to it. Beautiful oak, hand-carved, absolutely gorgeous. And as we approach this oak bench, the light breezes of the roses are still hitting us. The sun's beginning to rise. It's beginning to dry the moisture that's built up from our legs and our walk through the wheat. Sun hitting our arms and our face, and it's beginning to warm. Starting to feel a little bit of the morning breeze that's kicked up from the warming of the air. And we sit on this bench. And as we sit on this bench, we close our eyes. We take a few more deep breaths. And we go through our senses, kind of the inventory of, you know, I'm hearing the morning birds. I'm tasting the morning air. Smelling the beauty of the roses and the drying of the dew. And I just feel at peace. I have no place to be. I have no needs. I have no wants. And as I'm sitting there, I feel this embrace on my shoulders. And in almost like a very soft massage, embracing on my shoulders. And I hear this in my ear. I literally hear it out loud. Saying, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Now, my child, what shall you do for me today? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Julia, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Berlin, Germany. My sobriety date is September 23rd, 1985. My topic is a 9-step amend that changed my life. When I worked my first fifth step with my sponsor, when I was done, she said, now you go out, sit quietly for an hour, do 6 and 7, then you make your list. And you start with your amends, one amend a day, the hardest zuerst. My hardest amend was my dad. I went to my dad, and she said, they asked him for 5 minutes of his time, and you just say what you have to say. I went to my dad, and we're in the car, and I told dad that I was an alcoholic, and that I loved him, and that I was sorry about what had happened, and now things were going to change, because I'm sober. And there's a new life for us ahead. And my dad cried and he got it. He knew exactly what was going on. He got it. I said, oh, that was wonderful. I'm going to go to my mom now. I went to my mom. We're in the kitchen doing the dishes. I said, Mom, I need 5 minutes. I said, what do you want? She said, what do you want? I said, oh, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm sorry for the grief I caused you, and things are going to change now. She turned around and she said, do you want money? And I said, no, I want to make an amend. And she said, yeah, just go away. And I've been sober almost, that was when I was 20 years old. I celebrated 50 years of age last Monday. And until a couple of years ago, that was still what was going on with me and my mom. We had an incredibly painful relationship, even sober. And a few years, like I think it was 3 years ago, it was always this guilt. She kept asking, what have I done wrong? Tell me, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? And I didn't want to tell her that what she did wrong. I've got siblings who do that. I write letters to my mom telling her what she did wrong. But I thought, this is not what AA wants me to do. And one day I decided I'm going to write her a letter. And I wrote this letter. And I said, dear mom, there's things that you did wrong. Like when I was 14 or 16 and you were not around and it was really hard. Or when I had my two kids and the daddy had left and they were very small and you didn't come. Or when other things. But I listed a few things because I wanted her to take me seriously. I said, but look, you gave me the gift of life. And compared to the gift of life, all the little things that you... all the big things, in my opinion, that you did wrong, they amount to nothing. This is the gift of life, and this is what you did wrong. So, and look at, I have two boys, Lucas and Jack, they're 15 and 12. And without you, they wouldn't be there. So what am I to... And they are the best thing that ever happened to me. I wrote that in the letter. And I said, Mommy, I thank you for the gift of life, and I take it to the full price that it has cost you and me, and I'll make something out of it to honor you. And I told her in the letter, you're the right mommy for me, and I'm glad you chose daddy, because daddy is the right daddy for me, and I'm your right daughter. And I wrote that in the letter. I thought that was the best letter that has ever been written by an alcoholic to a mother, ever. And I thought I was going to get a prize for it. I thought I can write it, I just send it to the Grapevine, I'll send it to GSO, and they're going to nominate me president of AA for that letter. My mom wrote back with an email, because it was handwritten. My mom wrote me back an email. Do you want money? Stop writing me those letters, she said. I was like, I knew it was important. So I wrote back. I said, Mommy, you haven't written my letter. You haven't read my letter. I love you. And, you're just the right mommy. So whatever, this started something, a process with me and my mother on my side. And every time, she's a difficult woman. She's tough. But every time she get upset, she's difficult. She's impossible. Every time I get upset, I say to myself, you're the right mommy for me. And every time she asks me, what's wrong, what did I do? I said, you're the right mommy for me. And it calms everything down. It's all good. Oh. A month ago, she was diagnosed with cancer. And because now she's the right mommy for me, I can go visit her. And nothing that she does bothers me anymore. Nothing. And I go to her house, and I used to want everything she had. I wanted to steal in the house of my parents. I wanted to steal the books. I wanted to steal the jewels. I wanted love. And I want nothing anymore. And I'm there. And she goes, oh, I'm sorry, I'm so difficult. I said, Mommy, I love you. And last time I came because she's really sick now. And I'm so lucky because I can have this relationship with my mommy. And she gave me, She said, come, let's go down to the safe. I'll give you some jewels. I said, yeah. We went down to the cellar. She opened the safe, and she started dishing out the jewels. I didn't want them, but I took them because they're so beautiful. You know, she was so happy because she knows I don't want them anymore. I don't need them. I've got this beautiful ring from her. She's really sick, and she knows that she's got me now. And I keep telling her, Mommy, I'm on your side 100%. You cannot do wrong anymore. And she kept saying to me, I'm so glad you came. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so happy to have you. She's never said that. She's, after 5 minutes, she gets impatient. She's impossible. But I'm able to write to my siblings. I'm able to tell them mommy's sick, go to her, call her. I'm able to write the grandkids. I'm able to be a voice, a sober voice. I'm able to do my job as a daughter. It may have taken me 29 years, but it's never too late. And whatever God wanted for this to take this long, this is it. And so that's my story of my 9-step amen that changed my life.
Hi, my name is Ann S., and I'm from Port Washington, Wisconsin. My sobriety date is May 1st, 2010, and my home group is Monday Night Women's AA group, and I'm also the GSR, that group. Basically, my story, I grew up, both my parents were teachers, and when I grew up, it was expected that we'd go to college, and I went to college, and I decided to become a nurse, and part of the nursing curriculum of the college I went to Eastern Michigan University, but part of their curriculum is the student nurses had to do a community rotation. And part of the community rotation was that we attend an open AA meeting. And I can remember as a young junior looking at that date on the calendar and saying, oh, geez, I got to go to this AA meeting. You know, it's like 6 weeks down the road. And as the date got closer, it's like, oh, I really don't want to do this. But there was really no way to get around it. It was part of the course requirement. So I went to the open AA meeting, and I still remember the speaker. It was a very, very heart-rending. He told a story, and then he kind of ended his story with what I do every day. What I do every day is I try to make somebody's day better anonymously. So he on his ride to work, he would think, how can I make somebody's day better without them knowing it's me? And it could be simple things. If he knew somebody who, like, helped with the cleaning and he knew her favorite candy bar, he might leave that out. But every day, that was his focus, going to work. How can I make somebody's day better? And it really made an impression on me. Soon after I graduated, right after I graduated, I ended up getting married, and God protected me with my husband, thank God. The man I married is one in a million, and I say that because he never gave up on me. And I think I probably would have given up on me, but he never did. Our first years of marriage were busy. He worked as a chemical engineer, so we moved from Michigan to Texas. And in the process, we had two healthy sons, I'm very, very grateful for, but kind of binge drank when I was young. And then when my sons became teenagers, that's when I started using full-time. Teenage boys start to push their moms away, and I really couldn't handle it. So I started daily drinking. And I, working as a nurse, had access to pills, and I started taking pills and drinking, and it became the cycle of addiction that so many of us are familiar with. Finally, a friend of mine knew that I had taken some pills from her, and she went to the police. And in the meantime, I found out about it and lied to everybody about it. And she ended up, I did agree to go to outpatient treatment. So she ended up dropping the charges against me. And sometimes those things are not good because I had 7 more years of addiction. So sometimes it's good to face the consequences of your action. And I think she felt she was doing me a favor, which I was very grateful for at the time, but I can see that that allowed me to continue in my addiction for another 7 years. And finally I got to the point where I was suicidal. And I had remembered about the AA meeting I had gone to, and one of the counselors that I went to recommended going to AA, so I did. And when I went to AA, I got a sponsor, and I listened to my sponsor, and I went to 90 meetings in 90 days, and my sponsor basically told me, you can't work as a RN anymore, because around pills, I just had too much problems. It was too much temptation, and I accepted her information, and that was hard, but I no longer work as an RN. I work now as a special ed aide, and I work with small groups of children. The tools that I use today for my sobriety is I start every day with prayer. I keep a gratitude list where I write down what I'm grateful for, and I try to help someone every day, anonymously, and it does work, and thank you.
My name is Kat M. I'm from Wesley Chapel, Florida. My home group is Mad Dogs in Temple Terrace. My sobriety date is November 4th, 1994. I'd like to talk to you tonight about how I find my higher power. I was age 14, and not only had I started to drink, I also put God upon a shelf. At that age, I decided that I had done the things that I was told would keep me away from heaven and certainly damn me into hell. And I decided at that age that I'll live my life on my own. If I'm going to go to hell, I might as well have some fun doing it. Was it a conscious decision? Maybe not. But that decision was there. And for the next 20 years, that's exactly what I did. I drank alcoholically right out of the gate. There was no sipping here and sipping there. I was in a lot of pain. And my solution, so I thought, was alcohol. That went on for a long time. At one point in my life, I decided that if I owned a bar, I would be able to gain the respect of my friends and my family, because certainly I respected the 2:30 in the morning bar owner. That meant I was either on the inside of the bar to continue my drinking, or I was on the outside with nothing. And I wanted that control because I ran my own life. I was a monkey selling peanuts. 2 for you, more for me. And it was real easy to cover up all the things that I was doing in my blackout, because all I had to do was buy you more drinks. And you were my friend. as my alcoholic life goes, as many of us do, I got to a point where I was suicidal. And I had gotten suicidal often, but most of the time it was in the morning with the remorse and the guilt that I felt. But this time was different. This time I was drunk. This time I was starting to make a plan, and that scared me. I called suicide prevention, and they put me on hold. And I'm looking around for a candid camera thinking there has to be something here. This has got to be the joke. This is my life. Somehow I ended up in treatment that night. It's not a black eye. I don't have any idea how that ended up happening. But I do know that they disconnected my battery cables. And I didn't have insurance at the time, so what they ended up doing was I left against medical advice about 3 days later, simply because I didn't have the insurance and because I wanted to fix my outside world. I really didn't go in there to get sober. I really went in there just to get the monkeys off my back. And I was known as cold and callous at that time because I didn't cry. I was going to be a professional pallbearer for funeral homes. Hey, when it's your turn, let's just walk you down the aisle. You're dead, let's go. But I could make money at it. And the funeral homes that I called thought I was crazy. So I ended up going to get in my car. I left against medical advice. I sit in the car. And, you know, I'm listening to shock jocks at this time. And I'm listening to radio that isn't real healthy or isn't very spiritual, if you will. And then all of a sudden I hear, yes, Uncle Bob, I've got 3 feet of nasal passages. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is going to be a good one. This is what I need. And I remember that even the treatment center was telling me, you got to find a higher power. You got to find a higher power. And I was too scared. So I went to go turn my car on, and like I said, my battery cables were disconnected, so my radio stations were messed up. And yes, Uncle Bob, I got 3 feet of nasal passages. Wasn't a shock jock. But what it was a Christian children's radio program. And I sat there, and I listened to it. And it said that there was a deer up in the Arctic, and it had 3 feet of nasal passages. And something came over me, as it did just now, that maybe, just maybe, there's something out there that cares enough about me to help me stay sober. Because if there's something out there that cares enough about a deer in the Arctic to give it 3 feet of nasal passages, maybe, just maybe, I can tap into that power. Maybe, just maybe, I could get sober. Maybe, just maybe, my life can turn around. That was 20 plus years ago. And I still today, when I work with some new person, I don't tell them that you can get 20 years in 20 years. I say, maybe, just maybe, you can ask that higher power for today. Maybe, just maybe, you can walk away today and believe that there might be something out there that's stronger, higher power than you. I believe that your higher power will use whatever it takes to get your attention. If he used a deer in the Arctic with 3 feet of nasal passage to get mine, he'll use whatever it takes.
My name's Nellis F. from Drumheller, Alberta, Canada. I'm a member of the New Hope Group. I'm going to speak about how I found my higher power. I grew up in the church. I didn't really believe in a higher power. They had wine at church. That was my reward for going to church. I got a little buzz at the end. But I didn't believe. I didn't understand about God. And the questions I asked, I got told, you don't ask those questions. So I quit asking questions. And I went along with that because it was the rule of my house that we had to go to church. So I went. I got my wine at the end. Then I went out on my own. And without a God, anything is permissible. And I didn't do anything really bad, thank God. But I did some horrible things out there, abusing myself, of course, alcohol and other drugs. I really had no respect for myself. I lived to do what I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, and you better not be in my way or I throw you out of the way. So this can't go on indefinitely. You either die or you get here. Thank God I got to AA. And first meeting I heard, if you don't take a drink today, you're not going to get drunk. And I'd never thought of that before. I always was thinking about how to stay away from maybe the 10th or the 100th or the 1,000th drink, never the first one. So anyway, I accepted step one after a while. I could accept that. I read the doctor's opinion. It made a lot of sense. I definitely had the phenomenon of craving. And I had the mindset of alcoholics. I heard sober people, like normal people, talking about going to the bar and having two or three. And I'm thinking, why are you bothering going to the bar? The only reason to go to the bar is to get drunk. So anyway, I finally came to steps two and three. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, I thought about the old power from church. That was a God up there in heaven. He was looking down on you, waiting for you to do something wrong. He's going to pick you up. He's going to throw you into hell. There wasn't any way I was going to turn my will and my life over to the care of a God like that. So anyway, I read the big book a few times. And in the big book it says, if there is no God, the world was created out of nothing. Your life means nothing, and it proceeds nowhere. And I couldn't accept that. In Bill's story, it says, Abby says to Bill, choose a conception of a higher power greater than yourself, of your own conception. And that made the most sense to me. So I chose the spirit of love. And I came to believe in that kind of a higher power. And that was a higher power I could turn my will and my life over to. And today, that's what I do to stay sober. At the end of my drinking, I was praying to a God that I didn't believe in, that I wouldn't wake up the next day. I was angry every day I woke up. I had to go through another day. But now, I wake up, and I ask that God of love for guidance and direction through my day. And my day usually goes well. And I thank him at night for another day of sobriety. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Tracy. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from California, but I live in Monterrey, Mexico. I'm going to talk about going back to school sober. My dad told me that I could go to a junior college as long as I wanted to, just stay in school, just find something you like. And I actually took a class learning how to file your nails. It was for preparing you for a flight attendant. It took me 4 years to get enough credits to transfer to a university. And I transferred to San Diego State University because I wanted a sticker on my car that said SDSU, because I thought if I had that sticker on my car, I would be really cool. And I know I would get a boyfriend with that sticker on my car. So I went to San Diego State. I forgot to mention, staying at home, being at the junior college, I got arrested for drunk driving when I was 18 in a blackout. And I had was going to be on a diet that day, and so I took speed, and I drank a whole bottle of wine in my car outside of a bar with my fake ID in the... So I came to getting the test, and I remember them asking me to count backwards from 10, and I ended up with LMNOP. And coming to saying, put your hands behind your back, spread your legs, and I was thinking, oh, shoot, he's going to put handcuffs on. No, let me do a couple more. I know I can do it good this time. And so I was 18. I got my first DUI. I went to AA classes, they send you to classes. And I remember they said, you're an alcoholic and you'll be back. And I said, no, you don't know. I'm not going to ever do this again. And sure enough, at San Diego State University, within 2 months of being there, I got arrested for drunk driving again. So I knew that I was an alcoholic because I tried everything in my power to not drink and drive. I didn't want to stop drinking because I thought, are you crazy? Alcohol was my thing. I needed it to feel good enough. It was not an option. So anyways, at San Diego State University, had to walk home from jail, go back to my apartment with my normal roommates. And anyways, I got kicked out of San Diego State University because you can't stay in school with a D average. I didn't understand what the problem was. But I remember at one point laying in bed thinking, you know, they're telling me at meetings, you know, do the third step, you know, turn your will on. I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I stay in college? Do I go move back home? Do I get a job? I wanted to stay in the fraternity as a little sister because that was like such an accomplishment that this group of drunk boys chose me to be their a group of women, girls that accompanied them. It was like, but I was sober, so it was kind of awkward. Being sober, being in a sorority, being a little sister at a fraternity, going to AA meetings, you know, I didn't know what path to choose. And I remember consciously saying, I think I'm going to do that AA thing. That sounds like a good plan. So I dove into AA. And what I love to tell people is that they quickly said, you go to women's meetings, you know. And because I got a job as an aerobics instructor because the court said I couldn't drive to anywhere except work, school, and AA meetings. So smart alcoholic said, I'm going to get a job teaching aerobics, so that'll be exercise. And so I went to AA meetings and I taught aerobics and I went to a step study. And I remember after a couple of months at the step study, you know, they would say, read step pages, blah, 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 blah. And then next week, we're going to talk about that. And I literally learned how to study in a step study because, you know, what a concept. You prepare yourself ahead of time. That was so new to me because I cheated all through school. I always had little cheat sheets and I copied off people and I never, ever, ever prepared, ever. And my dad and my boyfriend and people around me were pressuring me to go back to school. And I thought, I don't want to. And, you know, I had to write a letter of kind of amends to be reinstated to the school. And it was hard because I was kind of promising, like, I promise I'll be good. But my promise was, you know, I'm in AA now, you know, so I wrote that letter and didn't know what was going to happen. But right around there, too, I got the opportunity to do this service called H&I, where it's hospitals and institutions, and they asked, is anybody willing to go and talk to a sorority about alcoholism? And I said, okay, I will. So I got to kind of make amends and talk to people about, you know, the progression of the disease and say, yes, I'm an alcoholic. And I was there. I had a Greek shirt on. And anyways, I did go back to school. And I got good grades, and I was passionate about what I was doing. I studied, I prepared, I became like the teacher's pet. I actually, people didn't like me because I got good grades, and I ruined the curve. And it took me 7 years, but I got a bachelor's degree. And I always say the only thing I've ever... Oh, my sobriety date is January 2nd, 1989. You know, so I was really young. And the only thing I've ever done right is AA. Like, that's the only thing. I remember thinking I wanted things hanging on my wall saying, you know, that I was great so that people would see, you know. And the only thing that I've ever been consistent at, and it's just because I did what you guys told me to do. You know, and I read and did the work. It feels like a class sometimes. I remember walking in my first AA meeting, looking up at the steps, thinking, oh, that must be for the people who want extra credit. And I am just so grateful to be sober. I've been here. I'm still here, you know. So it's like you just do what they tell you to do, and you get to stay. And God just keeps revealing himself more and more. And life just keeps changing and getting better, but I'm so grateful to be sober. Thank you.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for, but I'd like, now we can give a big round of applause for everyone.